Silent sigh and flipped open the menu. What do you recommend?
It's all good. Ask my boyfriend.
She gave a tight smile.
He's the cook.
Speaking of boyfriends, did Kirsten have one?
Nice segue, I told myself.
Spill, Whitney demanded. You a cop? A lawyer? A reporter?
Just a concerned citizen? It sounded like a question.
Yeah, right. Tell you what, order a milkshake, fries, the Angus burger, a bowl of chowder, and give me a 25% tip, and I'll tell you what I told everybody else.
I weighed my options, my allowance or answers.
Done. Kirsten hooked up with that kid, Elliot Saunders, the one in the papers. He was in here all the time, walked her back to her apartment at the end of her shift.
Did you ever talk to Elliot?
Not me.
Do you think Kirsten committed suicide?
How should I know?
I read in the newspaper that a suicide note was found in Kirsten's apartment, but that there was also evidence of a break-in.
And?
You don't find that a little odd?
If you're asking if I think Elliot could have put the note in her apartment, sure I do. Rich kid like that could get away with anything. Probably hired somebody to plant the note. That's how it works when you got money.
I don't think Elliot has a lot of money. My impression had always been that Jules was the wealthy one. V never stopped raving about his house. I think he went to Kinghorn Prep on scholarship.
Scholarship? She repeated on a snort. What's in the water you been drinking? If Elliot don't got big time money, how'd he buy Kirsten her apartment? Tell me that.
I struggled to hold my surprise in check. He bought her an apartment?
Kirsten never shut up about it. About drove me insane.
Why would he buy her an apartment? Whitney stared down at me, hands on hips.
Tell me you ain't really that dumb.
Oh, privacy, intimacy, got it. I said, do you know why Elliot transferred out of Kinghorn?
Didn't know he did.
I juggled her answers with the questions I still wanted to ask, trying to summon them up from memory. Did he ever meet friends here? Anyone other than Kirsten?
How am I supposed to remember that?
She gave a hard eye roll.
I look like I got one of them photographic memories.
How about a really tall guy? Really tall. Long blonde hair, good looking, tailored clothes. She ripped a ragged fingernail off with her front teeth and dropped it inside the pocket of her apron.
Yeah, I remember that guy. Hard not to. All moody and quiet. He came in once or twice. Wasn't that long ago. Maybe around the time Kirsten died. I remember because we were serving corned beef sandwiches for St. Patrick's Day, and I couldn't get him to order one. Just glared at me like he would have reached across the table and slit my throat if I'd stuck around reading the daily specials any longer. But I think I remember something. It's not like I'm nosy, but I do got ears. Sometimes I can't help hearing things. Last time the tall guy and Elliot came in, they were hunched over a table, talking about a test.
A test at school?
How should I know? From the sound of it, the tall guy failed the test, and Elliot was none too happy about it. He shoved his chair back and stormed out, didn't even eat all his sandwich.
Did they mention Kirsten?
The tall guy came in first, asked if Kirsten was working. I told him no, she wasn't, and he got on his cell phone. 10 minutes later, Elliot strolls in. Kirsten's always handled Elliot's table, but like I said, she wasn't working, so I got it. If they talked about Kirsten, I didn't hear. But it looked to me like the tall guy didn't want Kirsten around.
Do you remember anything else?
Depends. You going to order dessert?
I guess I'll have a slice of pie.
Pie? I give you 5 minutes of my valuable time and all you order is pie? I look like I got nothing better to do than chit-chat with you.
I glanced around the diner. It was dead. Other than a man hunched over a paper at the counter, I was the only customer.
Okay.
I scanned the menu.
You're going to want a raspberry lemonade to wash that pie down.
She scribbled it on her pad.
And after dinner, coffee.
More scribbling.
I'll be looking forward to an additional 20% tip with that.
She pinned me with a smug smile, then tucked her pad into her apron and sashayed back to the kitchen. Chapter 21. Outside, the weather had shifted to cold and drizzling. The lampposts burned an eerie, sallow color that did little against the thick fog brewing along the streets. I hurried out of Blind Joe's, grateful I'd looked at the weather forecast earlier and brought my umbrella. As I passed storefront windows, I saw crowds gathering in the bars. I was a few blocks from the bus stop when the now familiar icy feeling kissed the back of my neck. I'd felt it the night I was sure someone looked in my bedroom window, at Delphic, and again right before V walked out of Victoria's Secret wearing my jacket. I bent down, pretended to tie my shoelace, and cast a surreptitious glance around. The sidewalks on both sides of the street were empty. The crosswalk light changed, and I stepped off the curb. Moving faster, I tucked my handbag under my arm and hoped the bus was on time. I cut through an alley behind a bar, slipped past a huddle of smokers, and came out on the next street over. Jogging up a block, I veered down another alley and circled back around the block. Every few seconds, I checked behind me. I heard the rumble of the bus, and a moment later it rounded the corner, materializing out of the fog. It slowed against the curb and I climbed aboard, heading home. I was the only passenger. Taking a seat several rows behind the driver, I slouched to keep out of sight. He jerked the lever to close the doors and the bus roared down the street. I was on the verge of offering a sigh of relief when I received a text message from V.
"Where are you at?"
"Portland," I texted back.
"You?"
"Me too. At a party with Jules and Elliot. Let's meet up."
"Why are you in Portland?"
I didn't wait for her answer. I dialed her directly. Talking was faster, and this was urgent.
"Well, what say you?" V asked. "Are you in the partying mood? Does your mom know you're at a party in Portland with two guys?"
"You're starting to sound neurotic, babe."
"I can't believe you came to Portland with Elliot."
I had a sinking thought. "Does he know you're on the phone with me?"
"So he can come kill you?"
"No, sorry.
He and Jules ran to Kinghorn to pick up something, and I'm chilling solo. I could use a wingwoman."
"Hey!" V shouted into the background.
"Hands off, okay? O-F-F!"
"Nora, I'm not exactly in the greatest area. Time is of the essence.
Where are you?"
"Hang on.
Okay, the building across the street says 1727. The street is Highsmith, I'm pretty sure."
"I'll be there as soon as I can, but I'm not staying. I'm going home and you're coming with me.
Stop the bus!" I called to the driver.
He applied the brakes and I was thrown against the seat in front of me. "Can you tell me which way to Highsmith?" I asked him once I'd made it to the top of the aisle. He pointed out the windows paneling the right side of the bus.
"West of here. You planning to go on foot?"
He surveyed me up and down.
"'Cause I should warn you, it's a rough neighborhood."
Great. I had to walk only a few blocks before I knew the bus driver had been right to warn me. The scenery changed drastically. The quaint storefronts were replaced by buildings spray-painted with gang graffiti. The windows were dark, barred up with iron. The sidewalks were desolate paths stretching into the fog. A slow, rattling noise drifted through the fog, and a woman pushing a cart of garbage bags wheeled into view. Her eyes were raisins, beady and dark, and they twitched their way over me in almost predatory evaluation.
"What we got here?"
she said through a gape of missing teeth. I drew a discreet step back and clutched my handbag against me.
"Looks like a coat, mittens, and a pretty wool hat," she said. "Always wanted me a pretty wool hat."
She pronounced the word pretty.
"Hello," I said, clearing my throat and trying to sound friendly. "Can you please tell me how much farther to Highsmith Street?"
She cackled.
"A bus driver pointed me in this direction," I said with less confidence. "He told you Highsmith is this way," she said, sounding irritated. "I know the way to Highsmith, and this ain't it."
I waited, but she didn't elaborate. "Do you think you could give me directions?" I asked.
"I got directions."
She tapped her head with a finger that strongly resembled a twisted, knotted twig.
"Keep everything up here, I do."
"Which way is Highsmith?" I encouraged.
"But I can't tell you for free," she said in a chiding tone. "That's gonna cost you. A girl has to make a living. Nobody ever tell you ain't nothing in life free."
"I don't have any money. Not much, anyway. Only enough for a bus fare home."
"You got a nice warm coat."
I looked down at my quilted coat. A chilly wind ruffled my hair, and the thought of peeling my coat off sent a flush of goosebumps down my arms.
"I just got this coat for Christmas." "I'm freezing my derriere off out here," she snapped. "You want directions or not?"
I couldn't believe I was standing here. I couldn't believe I was bartering my coat with a homeless woman.
V was so far in debt to me, she might never get out. I shucked off my coat and watched her zip into it. My breath came out like smoke. I hugged myself and stamped my feet, conserving body heat. Can you please tell me the way to Highsmith now? You want the long way or the short way? Short, I chattered. That's gonna cost you too. Short way's got an additional fee attached. Like I said, always wanted me a pretty wool hat. I tugged the pink and white beanie off my head. Highsmith? I asked, trying to hold on to the friendly tone as I passed it over. See that alley? She said, pointing behind me. I turned. The alley was a half block back. You take it, and you come out on Highsmith on the other side. That's it? I said incredulously. One block over? Good news is, you got a short walk. Bad news is, ain't no walk feel short in this weather. Of course, I'm nice and warm now. I got me a coat and a pretty hat. Give me those mittens, and I'll walk you there myself. I looked down at the mittens. At least my hands were warm. I'll manage. She shrugged and wheeled her cart to the next corner, where she took up a post against the bricks. The alley was dark and cluttered with trash bins, water-stained cardboard boxes, and an unrecognizable hump that may have been a discarded water heater. Then again, it just as easily could have been a rug with a body rolled inside. A high chain-link fence spanned the alley halfway down. I could hardly climb a 4-foot fence on a good day, let alone a 10-foot one. Brick buildings flanked me on both sides. All the windows were greased over and barred. Stepping over crates and sacks of trash, I picked my way down the alley. Broken glass crunched beneath my shoes. A flash of white darted between my legs, stealing my breath. A cat. Just a cat, vanishing into the darkness ahead. I reached for my pocket to text V, intending to tell her I was close and to watch for me, when I remembered I'd left my cell phone in my coat pocket. Nice going, I thought. What are the chances the bag lady will give you back your phone? Precisely, slim to none. I decided it was worth a try, and as I turned around, a sleek black sedan sped past the opening to the alley. With a sudden glow of red, the brake lights lit up. For reasons I couldn't explain beyond intuition, I drew into the shadows. A car door opened, and the crackle of gunfire broke out. 2 shots. The car door slammed, and the black sedan screeched away. I could hear my heart hammering in my chest, and it blended with the sound of running feet. I realized a moment later that they were my feet, and I was running to the mouth of the alley. I rounded the corner and came up short. The bag lady's body was in a heap on the sidewalk. I rushed over and fell on my knees beside her. "Are you okay?" I said frantically, rolling her over. Her mouth was agape, her raisin eyes hollow. Dark liquid flowed through the quilted coat I'd been wearing 3 minutes ago. I felt the urge to jump back, but forced myself to reach inside the coat pockets. I needed to call for help, but my cell phone wasn't there. There was a phone booth on the corner across the street. I ran to it and dialed 911. While I waited for the operator to pick up, I glanced back at the bag lady's body, and that's when I felt cold adrenaline shoot through me. The body was gone. With a shaky hand, I hung up. The sound of approaching footsteps tapped in my ears, but whether they were near or far, I couldn't tell. Clip, clip, clip. He's here, I thought. The man in the ski mask. I shoved a few coins into the phone and gripped the receiver with both hands. I tried to remember Patch's cell phone number. Squeezing my eyes shut, I visualized the 7 numbers he'd written in red ink on my hand the first day we met. Before I could second-guess my memory, I dialed the numbers. "What's up?" Patch said. I almost sobbed at the sound of his voice. I could hear the crack of billiard balls colliding on a pool table in the background, and knew he was at Beau's Arcade. He could be here in 15, maybe 20 minutes. "It's me." I didn't dare push my voice above a whisper.
"Nora?"
"I'm in Portland, on the corner of Hampshire and Nantucket. Can you pick me up? It's urgent." I was huddled in the bottom of the phone booth, counting silently to 100, trying to remain calm, when a black Jeep Commander glided to the curb. Patch slid the door to the phone booth open and crouched in the entrance. He peeled off his top layer, a long-sleeved black T-shirt, leaving him in a black undershirt. He fit the neck hole of the T-shirt over my head and a moment later had my arms pushed through the sleeves. The shirt dwarfed me, the sleeves hanging down well past my fingertips. It mingled the smells of smoke, salt water, and mint soap.
Something about it filled the hollow places inside me with reassurance.
"Let's get you in the car," Patch said.
He pulled me up and I wrapped my arms around his neck and buried my face into him. "I think I'm going to be sick," I said. The world tilted, including Patch. "I need my iron pills."
"Shh," he said, holding me against him. "It's going to be all right. I'm here now."
I managed a little nod.
"Let's get out of here."
Another nod. "We need to get V," I said. "She's at a party one block over." While Patch drove the Jeep around the corner, I listened to my chattering teeth echo around inside my head. I'd never been this frightened in my life. Seeing the dead homeless woman conjured up thoughts of my dad. My vision was tinged with red, and as hard as I tried, I couldn't flush out the image of blood.
"Were you in the middle of a pool game?" I asked, remembering the sound of billiard balls colliding in the background during our brief phone conversation.
"I was winning a condo."
"A condo?"
"One of those swank ones on the lake. I would have hated the place. This is Highsmith. Do you have an address?"
"I can't remember it," I said, sitting up taller to get a better look out the windows. All of the buildings looked abandoned. There was no trace of a party. There was no trace of life, period.
"Do you have your cell?" I asked Patch. He slid a BlackBerry out of his pocket.
"Battery's low. I don't know if it'll make a call."
I texted V.
"Where are you?"
"Change of plans," she texted back. "Guess J and E couldn't find what they were looking for. We're going home." The screen drained to black.
"It died," I told Patch. "Do you have the charger?"
"Not on me."
"V's going back to Coldwater. Do you think you could drop me off at her house?" Minutes later, we were on the coastal highway, driving right along a cliff just above the ocean. I'd been this way before, and when the sun was out, the water was slate blue with patches of dark green where the water reflected the evergreens. It was night, and the ocean was smooth black poison.
"Are you going to tell me what happened?" Patch asked.
The jury was still out on whether or not I should tell Patch anything. I could tell him how, after the bag lady tricked me out of my coat, she was shot. I could tell him I thought the bullet was meant for me. Then I could try explaining how the bag lady's body had magically vanished into thin air. I remembered the crazed look Detective Vasso had directed at me when I told him someone had broken into my bedroom. I wasn't in the mood to get eyeballed and laughed at again. Not by Patch. Not right now.
"I got lost, and a bag lady cornered me," I said. "She talked me out of my coat."
I wiped my nose with the back of my hand and sniffled. "She got my beanie, too."
"What were you doing all the way out here?" asked Patch.
"Meeting V at a party."
We were halfway between Portland and Coldwater, on a stretch of lush and unpopulated highway, when steam spewed suddenly from the hood of the Jeep. Patch braked, easing the Jeep to the roadside.
"Hang on," he said, swinging out.
Lifting the hood of the Jeep, he disappeared out of sight. A minute later, he dropped the hood back in place. Brushing his hands on his pants, he came around to my window, gesturing for me to lower it.
"Bad news," he said. "It's the engine."
I tried to look informed and intelligent, but I had a feeling my expression just looked blank. Patch raised an eyebrow and said,
"May it rest in peace."
"It won't move?"
"Not unless we push it."
Of all the cars, he had to win the lemon.
"Where's your cell?"
Patch asked.
"I lost it," he grinned.
"Let me guess, in your coat pocket. The bag lady really cashed in, didn't she?"
He scouted the horizon.
"Two choices. We can flag down a ride, or we can walk to the next exit and find a phone."
I stepped out, shutting the door with force behind me. I kicked the Jeep's right front tire. I knew I was using anger to mask my fear of what I'd been through today. As soon as I was all alone, I'd break down crying.
"I think there's a motel at the next exit. I'll go call a cab," I said, my teeth chattering harder. "You wait here with the Jeep."
He cracked a slight smile, but it didn't look amused.
"I'm not letting you out of my sight. You're looking a little deranged, Angel. We'll go together."
Crossing my arms, I stood up to him. In tennis shoes, my eyes came level with his shoulders. I was forced to tilt my neck back to meet his eyes. "I'm not going anywhere near a motel with you." Best to sound firm, so I was less likely to change my mind.
"You think the two of us in a slummy motel make for a dangerous combination?"
"Yes, actually." Patch leaned back against the Jeep, We can sit here and argue this, he squinted up at the riotous sky, but this storm is about to catch its second wind.
As if Mother Nature wanted her say in the verdict, the sky opened and a thick concoction of rain and sleet hailed down. I sent Patch my coldest look, then blew out an angry sigh. As usual, he had a point. Chapter 22 20 minutes later, Patch and I washed up at the entrance to a low-budget motel. I had not spoken one word to him as we jogged through the sleeting rain, and now I was not only soaked, but thoroughly unnerved. The rain cascaded down, and I didn't think we would be returning to the Jeep anytime soon, which left me, Patch, and a motel in the same equation for an undetermined amount of time. The door chimed on our way in, and the desk clerk stood abruptly, dusting Cheetos crumbs off his lap.
"What'll it be?" he said, sucking his fingers clean of orange slime. "Just the two of you tonight?"
"We need to borrow your phone," I chattered, hoping he could make sense of my request.
"No can do. Lines are down. Blame the storm."
"What do you mean the lines are down? Do you have a cell?"
The clerk looked to Patch.
"She wants a non-smoking room,"
Patch said.
I swiveled to face Patch. "Are you insane?" I mouthed.
The clerk tapped a few keys at his computer.
"Looks like we've got, hang on, bingo, a non-smoking king." "We'll take it," said Patch.
He looked sideways at me, and the edges of his mouth tipped up. I narrowed my eyes. Just then the lights overhead blinked out, plunging the lobby into darkness. We all stood silent for a moment before the clerk fumbled around and clicked on an industrial-sized flashlight.
"I was a Boy Scout," he said. "Back in the day. Be prepared."
"Then you must have a cell phone," I said.
"I did, until I couldn't pay the bill anymore."
He drew his shoulders up.
"What can I say? My mom's cheap."
His mom?
He had to be 40. Not that it was any of my business. I was far more concerned what my mom would do when she arrived home from the reception and found me gone.
"How do you want to pay?"
the desk clerk asked.
"Cash," Patch said.
The desk clerk chuckled, bobbing his head up and down.
"It's a popular form of payment here."
He leaned close and spoke in confidential tones.
"We get a lot of folks who don't want their extracurricular activities traced, if you know what I mean."
The logical half of my brain was telling me I couldn't actually be considering spending the night at a motel with Patch.
"This is crazy," I told Patch in an undertone.
"I'm crazy."
He was on the brink of smiling again.
"About you." "How much for the flashlight?"
he asked the clerk. The clerk reached below the desk.
"I've got something even better. Survival-size candles," he said, placing two in front of us.
Striking a match, he lit one.
"They're all in the house, no extra charge. Put one in the bathroom and one in the sleeping area and you'll never know the difference. I'll even throw in the matchbook. If nothing else, it'll make a good keepsake."
"Thanks," Patch said, taking my elbow and walking me down the hall. At room 106, Patch bolted the door behind us. He set the candle on the nightstand, then used it to light the spare. Lifting his baseball cap, he shook the ends of his hair like a wet dog.
"You need a hot shower," he said.
Taking a few steps backward, he ducked his head inside the bathroom.
"Looks like bar soap and two towels."
I tilted my chin up a fraction.
"You can't force me to stay here."
I'd only agreed to come this far because I didn't want to stand out in the downpour, for one, and I had high hopes of finding a phone, for two.
"That sounded more like a question than a statement," said Patch.
"Then answer it."
His rogue smile crept out.
"It's hard to concentrate on answers with you looking like that."
I glanced down at Patch's black shirt, wet and clinging to my body. I brushed past him and shut the bathroom door between us. Cranking the water to full hot, I peeled out of Patch's shirt and my clothes. One long black hair was plastered to the shower wall, and I trapped it in a square of toilet paper before flushing it. Then I stepped behind the shower curtain, watching my skin glow with heat. Massaging soap into the muscles along my neck and down through my shoulders, I told myself I could handle sleeping in the same room as Patch. It wasn't the smartest or safest arrangement, but I'd personally see to it that nothing happened. Besides, what choice did I have, right? The spontaneous, reckless half of my brain laughed at me. I knew what it was thinking.
Early on, I'd felt drawn to Patch by a mysterious force field. Now I felt drawn to him by something entirely different. Something with a lot of heat involved. A connection tonight was inevitable. On a scale of 1 to 10, that terrified me about an 8, and excited me about a 9. I shut off the water, stepped out, and patted my skin dry. One glance at my soaked clothes was all I needed to know I had no desire to put them back on. Maybe there was a coin-operated dryer nearby, and one that didn't require electricity. I sighed and pulled on my camisole and panties, which had survived the worst of the rain.
"Patch," I whispered through the door.
"Done?"
"Blow out the candle."
"Done," he whispered back through the door. His laughter, too, sounded so soft it could have been whispered. Snuffing out the bathroom candle, I stepped out, meeting total blackness. I could hear Patch breathing directly in front of me. I didn't want to think about what he was or wasn't wearing, and I shook my head to fragment the picture forming in my mind. "My clothes are soaked. I don't have anything to wear." I heard the sound of wet fabric sliding like a squeegee over his skin. Lucky me. His shirt landed in a wet heap at our feet. "This is really awkward," I told him. I could feel him smiling. He stood way, way too close.
"You should shower," I said, "right now."
"I smell that bad?"
Actually, he smelled that good. The smoke was gone, the mint stronger. Patch disappeared inside the bathroom. He relit the candle and left the door ajar, a sliver of light stretching across the floor and up one wall. I slid my back down the wall until I was seated on the floor, then tipped my head against the wall. In all honesty, I couldn't stay here tonight. I had to get home. It was wrong to stay here alone with Patch, vow of prudence or not. I had to report the bag lady's body. Or did I? How was I supposed to report a vanished body? Talk about insane, which was the terrifying direction my thoughts were starting to go anyway. Not wanting to dwell on the insanity idea, I concentrated on my original argument. I couldn't stay here, knowing V was with Elliot, in danger, when I was safe. After a moment's consideration, I decided I needed to rephrase that thought. Safe was a relative term. As long as Patch was around, I wasn't in harm's way. But that didn't mean I thought he was going to act like my guardian angel either. Right away, I wished I could take back the guardian angel thought. Summoning up my powers of persuasion, I banished all thoughts of angels, guardian, fallen, or otherwise, from my head. I told myself I probably was going insane. For all I knew, I'd hallucinated seeing the bag lady die, and I'd hallucinated seeing Patch's scars. The water stopped, and a moment later, Patch strolled out wearing only his wet jeans hanging low on his waist. He left the bathroom candle lit and the door wide. Soft color glowed through the room. One quick look and I could tell Patch clocked several hours a week running and lifting weights. A body that defined didn't come without sweat and work. Suddenly, I felt a little self-conscious. Not to mention, soft.
"Which side of the bed do you want?"
he asked. A fox smile.
"Nervous?"
"No," I said as confidently as possible under the circumstances. And the circumstances were that I was lying through my teeth.
"You're a bad liar," he said, still smiling. "The worst I've seen."
I put my hands on my hips and communicated a silent, "Excuse me?"
"Come here,"
he said, pulling me to my feet. I felt my earlier promise of resistance melting away. Another 10 seconds of standing this close to Patch and my defense would be blown to smithereens. A mirror hung on the wall behind him, and over his shoulder I saw the upside-down V scars gleaming black on his skin. My whole body went rigid. I tried to blink the scars away, but they were there for good. Without thinking, I slid my hands up his chest and around to his back. A fingertip brushed his right scar. Patch tensed under my touch. I froze, the tip of my finger quivering on his scar. It took me a moment to realize it wasn't actually my finger moving, but me. All of me. I was sucked into a soft, dark chute, and everything went black. Chapter 23. I was standing in the lower level of Beau's Arcade with my back to the wall, facing several games of pool. The windows were boarded, and I couldn't tell if it was day or night. Stevie Nicks was coming through the speakers, the song about the white-winged dove and being on the edge of 17. Nobody seemed surprised by my sudden appearance out of thin air. And then I remembered I was wearing nothing but a cami and panties. I'm not all that vain, but standing in a crowd composed entirely of the opposite sex, my essentials barely covered, and nobody even looked at me, something was off. I pinched myself, perfectly alive, as far as I could tell. Waving a hand to clear away the hazy cloud of cigar smoke, I spotted Patch across the room. He was sitting at a poker table, kicked back, holding a hand of cards close to his chest. I padded barefoot across the room, crossing my arms over my chest, making sure to keep myself covered. "Can we talk?" I hissed in his ear. There was an unnerved quality to my voice, understandable, since I had no idea how I'd come to find myself at Beau's. One moment I was at the motel, and the next, I was here. Patch pushed a short stack of poker chips into the pile at the center of the table. "Like, maybe now?" I said. "It's kind of urgent." I trailed off when the calendar on the wall caught my eye. It was 8 months behind, showing August of last year. Right before I started sophomore year, months before I met Patch. I told myself it was a mistake, that whoever was in charge of ripping off the old months had fallen behind. But at the same time, I briefly and unwillingly considered the possibility that the calendar was right where it was supposed to be. And I was not. I dragged a chair over from the next table and pulled it up beside Patch. He's holding a 5 of spades, a 9 of spades, the 8 of hearts. I stopped when I realized that no one was paying attention. No, it wasn't that. No one could see me. Footsteps lumbered down the stairs across the room, and the same cashier who'd threatened to throw me out the first time I'd come to the arcade appeared at the bottom of the stairwell. "Someone upstairs wants a word with you," he told Patch. Patch raised his eyebrows, transmitting a silent question. "She wouldn't give her name," the cashier said apologetically. "I asked a couple of times. I told her you were in a private game, but she wouldn't leave. I can throw her out if you want."
"No, send her down."
Patch played out his hand, gathered his chips, and pushed out of his chair. "I'm out." He walked to the pool table closest to the stairs, rested against it, and slid his hands inside his pockets. I followed him across the room. I snapped my fingers in front of his face. I kicked his boots. I flat-out smacked his chest. He didn't flinch, didn't move. Light footsteps sounded on the stairs, growing closer, and when Miss Green stepped out of the darkened stairwell, I experienced a moment of confusion. Her blonde hair was down to her waist and toothpick straight. She was wearing painted-on jeans and a pink tank top, and she was barefoot. Dressed this way, she looked even closer to my age. She was sucking on a lollipop. Patch's face is always a mask, and at any given moment I have no idea what he's thinking. But as soon as he locked eyes on Miss Green, I knew he was surprised. He recovered quickly, all emotion funneling away as his eyes turned guarded and wary. "Dabria?" My heart hit a faster cadence. I tried to wrestle my thoughts together, but all I could think was, if I was really 8 months in the past, how did Miss Green and Patch know each other? She didn't have a job at school yet, and why was he calling her by her first name?
"How have you been?"
Miss Green, Dabria, asked with a coy smile, tossing the lollipop in the trash. "What are you doing here?" Patch's eyes turned even more watchful, as if he didn't think, "what you see is what you get," applied to Dabria.
"I sneaked out."
Her smile twisted up on one side.
"I had to see you again. I've been trying for a long time, but security, well, you know, it's not exactly lax. Your kind and my kind, we aren't supposed to mix, but you know that."
"Coming here was a bad idea."
"I know it's been a while, but I was hoping for a slightly more friendly reaction," she said, pushing her lips out in a pout. Patch didn't answer. "I haven't stopped thinking about you."
Dabria dimmed her voice to a low, sexy pitch and took a step closer to Patch.
"It wasn't easy getting down here. Luciana is making excuses for why I'm absent. I'm risking her future as well as my own. Don't you want to at least hear what I have to say?"
"Talk."
Patch's words didn't hold a shred of trust.
"I haven't given up on you," this whole time.
She broke off and blinked back a sudden display of tears. When she spoke again, her voice was more composed, but still held a wavering note.
I know how you can get your wings back.
She smiled at Patch, but he didn't return the smile.
As soon as you get your wings back, you can come home, she said, speaking more confidently. Everything will be like it was before. Nothing has changed. Not really.
What's the catch?
There is no catch. You have to save a human life. Very judicious, considering the crime that banished you here in the first place.
What rank will I be?
All confidence scattered from Dabria's eyes, and I got the feeling he'd asked the one question she'd hoped to avoid.
I just told you how to get your wings back, she said, sounding a touch condescending. I think I deserve a thank you.
Answer the question.
But his grim smile told me he already knew, or had a very good guess. Whatever Dabria's answer was, he wasn't going to like it.
Fine. You'll be a guardian, all right.
Patch tipped his head back and laughed softly.
What's wrong with being a guardian? Dabria demanded. Why isn't it good enough?
I have something better in the works.
Listen to me, Patch. There's nothing better. You're kidding yourself. Any other fallen angel would jump at the chance to get their wings back and become a guardian. Why can't you?
Her voice was choked with bewilderment, irritation, rejection. Patch pushed up from the pool table.
It was good seeing you again, Dabria. Have a nice trip back.
Without warning, she curled her fists into his shirt, yanked him close, and crushed a kiss to his mouth. Very slowly, Patch's body turned toward her, his stance softening. His hands came up and skimmed her arms. I swallowed hard, trying to ignore the stab of jealousy and confusion in my heart. Part of me wanted to turn away and cry. Part of me wanted to march over and start shouting. Not that it would do any good. I was invisible. Obviously, Miss Green, Dabria, whoever she was, and Patch had a romantic past together. Were they still together now? In the future? Had she applied for a job at Coldwater High to be closer to Patch? Is that why she was so determined to scare me away from him?
I should go, said Dabria, pulling free. I've already stayed too long. I promised Luciana I'd hurry.
She lowered her head against his chest.
I miss you, she whispered. Save one human life and you'll have your wings again. Come back to me, she begged. Come home.
She broke away suddenly.
I have to go. None of the others can find out I've been down here. I love you.
As Dabria turned away, the anxiety vanished from her face. An expression of sly confidence replaced it. It was the face of someone who'd bluffed their way through a rough hand of cards. Without warning, Patch caught her by the wrist.
Now tell me why you're really here, he said.
I shivered at the dark undercurrent in Patch's tone. To an outsider, he looked perfectly calm, but to anyone who'd known him any length of time, it was obvious. He was giving Dabria a look that said she'd crossed a line and it was in her best interest to hop back across it now. Patch steered her toward the bar. He planted her on a bar stool and slid onto the one beside it. I took the one next to Patch, leaning in to hear him above the music.
What do you mean, what am I here for?
Dabria stammered.
I told you.
You're lying.
Her mouth dropped.
I can't believe you think...
Tell me the truth right now, said Patch.
Dabria hesitated before answering. She gave him a fierce glare, then said,
Fine. I know what you're planning to do.
Patch laughed. It was a laugh that said, I have a lot of plans. Which one are you referring to?
I know you've heard rumors about the Book of Enoch. I also know you think you can do the same thing, but you can't.
Patch folded his arms on the bar.
They sent you here to persuade me to choose a different course, didn't they?
A smile showed in his eyes.
If I'm a threat, the rumors must be true.
No, they're not. They're rumors.
If it happened once, it can happen again.
It never happened. Did you even bother to read the Book of Enoch before you fell?
She challenged.
Do you know exactly what it says, word for holy word?
Maybe you could loan me your copy.
That's blasphemous. You're forbidden to read it, she cried. You betrayed every angel in heaven when you fell.
How many of them know what I'm after? He asked. How big of a threat am I?
She tossed her head side to side. I can't tell you that. I've already told you more than I should have.
Are they going to try to stop me?
The avenging angels will.
He looked at her with meaning. Unless they think you talked me out of it.
Don't look at me like that. She sounded like she was putting all her courage into sounding firm. I won't lie to protect you. What you're trying to do is wrong. It's not natural.
Dabria.
Patch spoke her name as a soft threat. He might as well have had her by the arm, twisting it behind her back. I can't help you, she said with quiet conviction. Not that way. Put it out of your mind. Become a guardian angel. Focus on that and forget the Book of Enoch. Patch planted his elbows on the bar, radiating thought. After a moment, he said,
Tell them we talked, and I showed interest in becoming a guardian.
Interest? She said, a bit incredulously.
Interest, he repeated. Tell them I asked for a name. If I'm going to save a life, I need to know who's at the top of your departing list. I know you're privy to that information as an angel of death.
That information is sacred and private, and not predictable. The events in this world shift from moment to moment, depending on human choices.
One name, Dabria.
Promise me you'll forget about the Book of Enoch first. Give me your word.
You'd trust my word?
No, she said. I wouldn't. Patch laughed coolly, and grabbing a toothpick from the dispenser, walked toward the stairs. Patch, wait! She began. She hopped off the barstool. Patch, please wait! He looked over his shoulder. Nora Gray, she said, then immediately clamped her hands over her mouth. There was a faint crack in Patch's expression, a frown of disbelief mixed with annoyance, which made no sense since, if the calendar on the wall was correct, we hadn't met yet. My name shouldn't have sparked familiarity.
How is she going to die? He asked.
Someone wants to kill her.
Who?
I don't know, she said, covering her ears and shaking her head. There's so much noise and commotion down here. All the images blur together. They come too fast. I can't see clearly. I need to go home. I need peace and calm. Patch tucked a strand of Dabria's hair behind her ear and looked at her persuasively. She gave a warm shudder at his touch, then nodded and shut her eyes. I can't see. I don't see anything. It's useless.
Who wants to kill Nora Gray?
Patch urged. Wait, I see her, said Dabria. Her voice turned anxious. There's a shadow behind her. It's him. He's following her. She doesn't see him, but he's right there. Why doesn't she see him? Why isn't she running? I can't see his face. It's in the shadow. Dabria's eyes flew open. She sucked in a quick, sharp breath.
Who?
Patch said. Dabria curled her hands against her mouth. She was trembling as she raised her eyes to Patch's. You, she whispered. My finger moved off Patch's scar and the connection broke. It took me a moment to reorient myself, so I wasn't ready for Patch, who wrestled me into the bed in an instant. He pinned my wrists above my head.
You weren't supposed to do that.
There was controlled anger in his face, dark and simmering.
What did you see?
I got my knee up and clipped him in the ribs. Get off me! He slid onto my hips, straddling them, eliminating the use of my legs. With my arms still stretched above my head, I couldn't do more than squirm under his weight. Get off me, or I'll scream!
You're already screaming, and it isn't going to cause a stir in this place. It's more of a whorehouse than a motel.
He gave a hard smile that was all lethality around the edges.
Last chance, Nora. What did you see?
I was fighting back tears. My whole body hummed with an emotion so foreign I couldn't even name it. You make me sick, I said. Who are you? Who are you really? His mouth turned even more grim.
We're getting closer.
You want to kill me. Patch's face gave away nothing, but his eyes grew cold.
The Jeep didn't really die tonight, did it? I said.
You lied. You brought me here so you could kill me. That's what Dabria said you want to do.
Well, what are you waiting for?
I didn't have a clue where I was going with this, and I didn't care. I was spitting words in an attempt to keep my horror at bay.
You've been trying to kill me all along, right from the start. Are you going to kill me now?
I stared at him, hard and unblinking, trying to keep tears from spilling as I remembered the fateful day he'd walked into my life.
It's tempting.
I twisted beneath him. I tried to roll to my right, then to my left. I finally figured out I was wasting a lot of energy and stopped. Patch settled his eyes on me. They were blacker than I'd ever seen them. I bet you like this, I said.
That would be a smart bet.
I felt my heart pounding clear down in my toes. Just do it, I said in a challenging voice.
Kill you?
I nodded. But first, I want to know why. Of all the billions of people out there, why me?
Bad genes.
That's it? That's the only explanation I get?
For now?
What's that supposed to mean? My voice rose again. I get the rest of the story when you finally break down and kill me?
I don't have to break down to kill you. If I'd wanted you dead 5 minutes ago, you'd have died 5 minutes ago.
I swallowed at the less than cheerful thought. He brushed his thumb over my birthmark. His touch was deceptively soft, which made it all the more painful to endure.
What about Dabria?
I asked, still breathing hard.
She's the same thing you are, isn't she?
You're both angels. My voice cracked on the word. Pact rotated slightly off my hips, but kept his hands at my wrists.
If I ease up, are you going to hear me out?
If he eased up, I was going to bolt for the door.
What do you care if I run? You'll just drag me back in here.
Yeah, but that would cause a scene.
Is Dabria your girlfriend?
I could feel each ragged rise and fall of my chest. I wasn't sure I wanted to hear his answer. Not that it mattered. Now that I knew Patch wanted to kill me, it was ridiculous that I even cared.
Was. It was a long time ago before I fell to the dark side.
He gave a hard smile, attempting humor.
It was also a mistake.
He rocked back on his heels, slowly releasing me, testing to see if I'd fight back. I lay on the mattress, breathing hard, my elbows propping me up. 3 counts went by, and I hurled myself at him with all the force I had. I shoved against his chest, but other than swaying back slightly, he didn't move. I scrambled out from under him and took my fists to him. I hammered his chest until the bottoms of my fists began to throb.
Done?
He asked.
No!
I drove my elbow down into his thigh.
What's the matter with you? Don't you feel anything?
I rose to my feet, found my balance on the mattress, and kicked him as hard as I could in the stomach.
You've got 1 more minute, he said. Get your anger out of your system, then I take over.
I didn't know what he meant by take over, and I didn't want to find out. I made a leaping run off the bed, with the door in sight. Patch snagged me mid-air and backed me against the wall. His legs were flush with mine, front to front down the lengths of our thighs.
I want the truth, I said, struggling not to cry. Did you come to school to kill me? Was that your aim right from the start?
A muscle in Patch's jaw jumped.
Yes.
I swiped a tear that dared escape.
Are you gloating inside? That's what this is about, isn't it? Getting me to trust you so you could blow it up in my face.
I knew I was being irrationally irate. I should have been terrified and frantic. I should have been doing everything in my power to escape. The most irrational part of all was that I still didn't want to believe he would kill me, and no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't smother that illogical speck of trust.
I get that you're angry, said Patch.
I am ripped apart, I shouted. His hands slid up my neck, searing hot. Pressing his thumbs gently into my throat, he tipped my head back. I felt his lips come against mine so hard he stopped whatever name I'd been about to call him from coming out. His hands dropped to my shoulders, skimmed down my arms, and came to rest at the small of my back. Little shivers of panic and pleasure shot through me. He tried to pull me against him, and I bit him on the lip. He licked his lip with the tip of his tongue.
Did you just bite me?
Is everything a joke to you? I asked. He dabbed his tongue to his lip again.
Not everything, Like what?
You.
The whole night felt unbalanced. It was hard to have a showdown with someone as indifferent as Patch. No, not indifferent. Perfectly controlled. Down to the last cell in his body. I heard a voice in my mind.
Relax. Trust me.
Oh my gosh, I said with a burst of clarity. You're doing it again, aren't you? Messing with my mind? I remembered the article I'd pulled up when I Googled fallen angels. You can put more than words in my head, can't you? You can put images, very real images, there. He didn't deny it. The Archangel, I said, finally understanding. You tried to kill me that night, didn't you? But something went wrong. Then you made me think my cell phone was dead, so I couldn't call V. Did you plan to kill me on the ride home? I want to know how you're making me see what you want. His face was carefully expressionless.
I put the words and images there, but it's up to you if you believe them. It's a riddle. The images overlap reality, and you have to figure out which is real.
Is this a special angel power?
He shook his head. Fallen angel power. Any other kind of angel wouldn't invade your privacy, even though they can.
Because other angels were good, and Patch was not. Patch braced his hands against the wall behind me, one on either side of my head.
I put a thought in Coach's mind to redo the seating chart because I needed to get close to you. I made you think you fell off the Archangel because I wanted to kill you, but I couldn't go through with it. I almost did, but I stopped. I settled for scaring you instead. Then I made you think your cell was dead because I wanted to give you a ride home. When I came inside your house, I picked up a knife. I was going to kill you then.
His voice softened.
You changed my mind.
I sucked in a deep breath. I don't understand you. When I told you my dad was murdered, you sounded genuinely sorry. When you met my mom, you were nice.
Nice. Patch repeated. Let's keep that between you and me.
My head spun faster, and I could feel my pulse beating in my temples. I'd felt this heart-pounding panic before. I needed my iron pills. Either that, or Patch was making me think I did. I tilted my chin up and narrowed my eyes. Get out of my mind, right now!
I'm not in your mind, Nora.
I bent forward, bracing my hands on my knees, sucking air. Yes, you are. I feel you. So this is how you're going to do it? Suffocate me? Soft popping sounds echoed in my ears, and a blurry black framed my vision. I tried to fill my lungs, but it was like the air had disappeared. The world tilted and Patch slipped sideways in my vision. I flattened my hand to the wall to steady my balance. The deeper I tried to inhale, the tighter my throat constricted. Patch moved toward me, but I flung my hand out. Get away! He leaned a shoulder on the wall and faced me, his mouth set with concern. Get away from me, I gasped. He didn't. I can't breathe, I choked, clawing at the wall with one hand, clutching my throat with the other. Suddenly, Patch scooped me up and carried me to the chair across the room.
Put your head between your knees, he said, guiding my head down.
I had my head down, breathing rapidly, trying to force air inside my lungs. Very slowly, I felt the oxygen creep back into my body.
Better? Patch asked after a minute.
I nodded once.
Do you have iron pills with you?
I shook my head.
Keep your head down and take long, deep breaths.
I followed his instructions, feeling a clamp loosen around my chest. Thank you, I said quietly.
Still don't trust my motives?
If you want me to trust you, let me touch your scars again. Patch studied me silently for a long moment.
That's not a good idea.
Why not?
I can't control what you see.
That's kind of the point. He waited a few counts before answering. His voice was low, emotions untraceable.
You know I'm hiding things?
There was a question attached to it. I knew Patch lived a life of closed doors and harbored secrets. I wasn't presumptuous enough to think even half of them revolved around me. Patch lived a different life outside the one he shared with me. More than once I'd speculated what his other life might be like. I always got the feeling that the less I knew about it, the better. My lip wobbled. Give me a reason to trust you. Patch sat on the corner of the bed, the mattress sinking under his weight. He bent forward, resting his forearms on his knees. His scars were in full view, the candlelight dancing eerie shadows across their surface. The muscles in his back heightened, then relaxed.
Go ahead, he said quietly. Keep in mind that people change, but the past doesn't.
Suddenly, I wasn't so sure I wanted this. On almost every level, Patch terrified me. But deep down, I didn't think he was going to kill me. If that was what he wanted, he would have done it already. I glanced at his gruesome scars. Trusting Patch felt a lot more comfortable than slipping into his past again and having no idea what I might find. But if I backed out now, Patch would know I was terrified of him. He was opening one of the closed doors just for me, and only because I'd asked for it. I couldn't make a request this heavy, then change my mind. I won't get trapped in there forever, will I? I asked. Patch gave a short laugh. No. Summoning my courage, I sat on the bed beside him. For the second time tonight, my finger brushed the peaked ridge of his scar. A hazy gray crowded my vision, working from the edges in. The lights went out. Chapter 24. I was on my back, my cami sponging up moisture beneath me, blades of grass poking the bare skin on my arms. The moon overhead was nothing more than a sliver, a grin tipped on its side. Other than the rumble of distant thunder, all was quiet. I blinked several times in succession, helping my eyes hurry and adapt to the scant light. When I rolled my head sideways, a symmetrical arrangement of curved twigs poking up from the grass solidified in my vision. Very slowly, I pulled myself up. I couldn't tear my eyes away from the two black orbs staring at me from just above the curved twigs. My mind worked to place the familiar image. And then, with a horrific flash of recognition, I knew. I was lying next to a human skeleton. I crawled backward until I came up against an iron fence. I pushed through the muddled moment and recaptured my last memory. I'd touched Patch's scars. Wherever I was, it was somewhere inside his memory. A voice, male and vaguely familiar, carried through the darkness, singing a low tune. Turning toward it, I saw a labyrinth of headstones stretching like dominoes into the mist. Patch was crouched on top of one. He wore only Levi's and a navy t-shirt, even though the night wasn't warm. "Moonlighting with the dead," called the familiar voice. It was rough, rich, and Irish. Rickson. He slouched against a headstone opposite Patch, watching him. He stroked his thumb across his bottom lip. "Let me guess. You've got it in your mind to possess the dead." "I dunno," he said, wagging his head. "Maggots squirming in your eye holes, in your other orifices. Might be carrying things a bit too far."
"This is why I keep you around, Rickson. Always seeing things from the bright side."
"Cheshvan starts tonight," Rickson said. "What are you doing, arsing around in a graveyard?"
"Thinking."
"Thinking?"
"A process by which I use my brain to make a rational decision."
The corners of Rickson's mouth pulled down.
"I'm starting to worry about you. Come on, time to go. Chancy Langer and Barnabas await. The moon turns at midnight. I confess, I've got my eye on a Betty in town."
He gave a cat-like purr.
"I know you like 'em red, but I like 'em fair. And once I get into a body, I intend to take care of unfinished business with a blonde who was making eyes at me earlier."
When Patch didn't move, Rickson said,
"Are you daft? We've got to go. Chauncey's oath of fealty, not ringing a bell. How about this? You're a fallen angel. You can't fail a thing. Until tonight, that is. The next 2 weeks are Chauncey's gift to you. Given unwillingly, mind you."
He added on a conspirator's grin. Patch gave Rickson a sidelong glance.
"What do you know about the Book of Enoch?"
"About as much as any fallen angel. Slim to none."
"I was told there's a story in the Book of Enoch about a fallen angel who becomes human."
Rickson doubled over with laughter.
You lost your mind, mate.
He welded the outer edges of his palms together, making an open book with his hands.
The Book of Enoch is a bedtime story, and a good one by the looks of it. Sent you.